Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Let's welcome Chairman, Board of ICANN, Peter Dengate Thrush.
What a nice welcome for an early morning start after a hard week. Thank you very much. Let's begin with the series of reports. This is something that we changed a few meetings ago to make sure that we gave more time to the public forum. We used to do these reports as part of the public forum, and instead to give more open microphone time, we've changed this around slightly, so now there's a block of formal reports, and I think that's working quite well. Certainly, the community seems to have responded well to the microphone and used it to the full extent yesterday. So we begin with a series of reports from board committees. These are largely unsung exercises, and a lot of what goes on the board committees is keeping the engine of ICANN running. A lot of them are directed not so much to the policy-making process, which goes on in public, but to the corporate matters of making sure that the organisation keeps running, another one of the obligations of being a director. So if we could put up the first slide about board committees, that will take us to a list of them. These were restructured a year or so ago when I became chair, just as out of a sense of reorienting board effort into areas of the greatest concern and the greatest corporate responsibility. One that we've always had, though, is an audit committee that's chaired by Rita Rodan Johnson, who sends her apologies. She was called away, I gather, just as she was putting her bag. Is that Rita trying to join? She is?
Hi.
There you go. Morning, Rita. We were just mentioning your name, and you flew in from New York. It's fantastic. The technology is superb.
Skype is working.
And we can see you on a screen at the back of the stage. Rita, if you look as if you're sitting between Suzanne and Harold. except that you look much more comfortable and relaxed than we all do. Rita, we'll come to you in a moment to if you can, to do the board report. If not, I know you've arranged for someone here to handle that for you. So welcome. The next committee is the Board Governance Committee, which deals with a lot of very important matters, including some that you will see the fruits of later in the morning. Board Governance Committee focuses on making sure the board runs effectively. It looks at issues like training of board members, the induction program when they arrive, making sure that we review ourselves and keep checking that we're performing accurately. And the most important thing is that we'll see later on in the morning is the preparing of a slate of officers for the board itself. So it's that the BGC is tasked with creating a slate including the chairman of the board, the vice chairman of the board, chairs of all these committees, and then populating all these committees with directors and liaisons. So a major piece of work, and Dennis Jennings will take us through that. Then, as you'd expect, there's a finance committee. Finances. It's probably self-evident. Anyone and any of you who are involved in any way in the world will understand the necessity for a finance committee. That's chaired by Rajasekhar Ramaraj. It has a series of responsibilities. Perhaps the most visible one is the preparation and discussion through the discussion with the community of the ICANN budget. But it's constantly working on all aspects of the finances, including, for example, developing a reserves policy and then monitoring through the staff the performance of the reserve fund. One of ICANN's most important functions, of course, is managing the IANA function, and we have a committee headed by Harold Alvestrand that looks into all of the IANA matters, keeps track of the performance, consumer satisfaction, and changes to policies that may be necessary for IANA. Again, a new committee, as is the next one, the Public Participation Committee. Public participation is enormously important for ICANN. We have a lot of activities which depend crucially on public participation, for example, submissions on policy development processes, coming to meetings, the content of the meetings, the structure of the meetings. So we formed a public participation committee a short while ago, and we've been very well led there by Jean-Jacques Subrenard, and one of the fruits of their labours was the development of a public document process. Part of that work has included creating the document blackout, so that documents, to the extent possible, all the documents that we've been discussing at this meeting have been available for 15 days prior to the meeting. So they're focusing on making sure that the community can participate as they're required to do, and it's been ably staffed, as you heard yesterday, by Kieran McCarthy, who's the manager of public participation and whose departure we recognised yesterday. The next is a new committee, the Risk Committee. This is a focus on making sure that all of the potential risks to the business and the operations of ICANN are assessed to the extent possible and remediation steps put in place, ably chaired by my Antipodean colleague Bruce Tonkin. And last, another important new committee, the Structural Improvements Committee. This took over the work that had ended up in the Board Governance Committee of managing the ongoing, complex and highly important review process. These are the reviews under the bylaws that are mandated. And as you know, we're going through GMSO review, we're going through board review and a number of others that you'll be involved in. This is the committee that manages that process, that helps appoint the working groups, find the outside consultants and then reports back, and ably chaired by Vice Chairman Roberto Gaetano. So we go to the next slide. Please. Each committee has prepared a report on the major work prepared since Sydney, and this is reporting to you on that. And in conformance with one of our own processes, I'm delighted to report that they were all posted for review before the Sol meeting came, so you have had access to those. And they can be found at that website for committee reports. So with that, let's move to the Audit Committee. Now, Rita, I see you've moved from being between oh, there you are. Rita, would you like to handle the presentation of the Audit Committee report, or would you like me to ask Harold, who I know you've had on standby, to do that?
I just need to look at my computer, and someone said I was really loud, and it's disturbing. I'm happy to have Harold do it. If you can hear me, I'm happy to also do it myself.
Well, if you're able to do it yourself, let's do that. So over to you, Rita.
That's fine.
Yep. Maybe not. Thank you, Rita. I'll relay questions to you from the floor if there are any. Are there any questions of the Chair of the Board Audit Committee? Any comments from any other members of that committee? If not, thank you, Rita. We'll accept that report formally later in the board meeting. Thank you very much. That we move then, please, to the report of the Board Governance Committee, and I call on Dennis Jennings, the Chair of that committee, to give us the report. Dennis.
Thank you, Peter.
Je vous remercie, Peter. Si vous pouviez montrer la première diapositive de ce rapport qui couvre les membres.
In front of you. If you could put up the next slide, please. These are the things that we have been involved in recently. One of the things that has taken some time is getting minutes out from the committees, and so we've been developing and leading best practice for the online approval of minutes using online tools to try and get them out faster to the community rather than wait for the next committee meeting to approve them, which might be a month or more. We're trying to get them out within a week. In relation to the nominating committee, our current tasks are to recommend to the ICANN board a candidate for the chair and a candidate for the research and academia representative, and this we did successfully this year. And most importantly, ICANN has a conflicts of interest policy, which we reviewed and revised and finalized, and we also implemented that and got conflict of interest statements from all directors and reviewed them so that the Board Governance Committee is clear where the potential conflicts might arise when committee board members are discussing various activities on the board. Next slide, if you would. We developed a survey. This is very important, as Peter has said. Every year, the Board Governance Committee is required to develop a slate of candidates for the leadership roles within the within the ICANN board and have those approved at the AGM. This covers the chair, the vice chair, the committee chairs, and the membership of each committee. We've taken a slightly different approach this year in that we have decided that, as a BGC, that it will be more effective to have board members on a smaller number of committees than has been the practice in the past, and to have smaller committees with the concomitant responsibility on board members to focus on those two, usually, committees and to work on them. One of the aspects of good boards is that they assess themselves from time to time, usually annually, and use some sort of self-assessment tool to find out how well they're working, how well the chair is performing the chair's duties, and in some cases, and we haven't got to this yet, reviewing the performance from the perspective of the whole board, of each board member. We tested an online system for doing that during the year, and we recommended it to the board that we undertake a self-assessment of the chair and of the whole board, and we have completed that and are reviewing the results and working in various board sessions to understand the results and to see what indications they have for improvement of our collective performance. Something that we started last year was to improve the board induction processes and the ongoing training processes to make sure that every board member has the tools and understanding to contribute effectively to the committees and to the board, and that's ongoing. And we have had some training programs on audit and on risk management, which the staff have run for us. Next slide. Is there another slide, or is that it? No, we have indeed. Most recently, you may remember that the board agreed to establish a board GAC working group. We have set up the ICANN board membership of that. We've recommended that to the board. That's been approved. And at this meeting, we will have in front of us the terms of reference for the board GAC working group, which have been developed by the working group. The co-chair on our side is Ray Polzak. Co-chair on the GAC side is Heather Dryden. And those terms of reference are in front of us. Increasingly, the idea of independence of directors is important, and we have discussed that. It's under the new regulations for U.S., California, not-for-profit corporations. The requirements of independence of a majority of board members are more strict. We reviewed that. And as indicated earlier, we've initiated discussions on how to improve board performance, not only through induction and training, but also looking at board processes and see if we can improve those processes to become more efficient. And that, I believe, is the report of the Board Governance Committee Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Dennis. Are there any questions from the floor of the Chair of the Board Governance Committee? Very full slate of activities, and thank you, Dennis. Any comment from any other committee members or board questions? If not, we'll move to the next one, which is the Finance Committee, and I call on Rajasekhar Ramaraj to give us the report from the Board Finance Committee. Ram.
Thank you, Peter. The committee's report has been out there and posted for about 2 weeks, so I'll just touch upon a few highlights of the last 1 year. One focus of the Finance Committee has been to enhance transparency, and towards this you would have seen much better reporting, clarity on functional reporting, clarity on expenses grouped by different support organizations, and so one focus to be continued is to see how we can enhance better reporting, better cost allocation, and more transparency. So reporting, and you'll see all these reports on the dashboard. So one has been enhanced transparency through better reporting. On the reserve fund, I have good news that the reserve fund is actually in the black, just so. We have about $44 million in the reserve fund, and that policy got reviewed in Sydney to seeing under these market conditions whether our investment policies continue to be valid, and we got inputs from an outside party that it is so. We've also looked at a couple of initiatives on enhancing accountability, and this is, and you'll see shortly, a framework on both procurement and on director expenses, and that is work in progress, and that will be out in terms of a procurement policy and more accountability on some of these areas. On the budgeting for the year that we are in, FY10, I had mentioned in Sydney that staff and finance committee would like to have the opportunity to review how that budget is progressing, the revenue streams in these market conditions. We wanted to be sure that those revenue streams continue to be robust, and there have been some expenses, especially with the AOC and a few other things, that may get enhanced. So we would like to take the opportunity to review and come back to the community maybe over the next few weeks in case there are any proposed changes. But the budget would be reviewed midterm, just to be sure that both revenue and expenses are within the proposed limits. Lastly, while we continue to focus on better transparency, accountability, going forward this year, we're going to look at a few strategic issues in terms of lines of revenue, how are they, how sustainable are some of these, what else should we be looking at, financial risks, and some areas that are strategic to ICANN. So that's broadly our committee's work. If there are any questions, I'd be happy to answer.
Thanks, Ram. Are there any questions? I see somebody striding purposefully to the microphone and assume that it's a question. Thank you, Marilyn.
Thank you. My name is Marilyn Cade. I do have a question that may come up at a different time or may need to be deferred, but let me pose it. In the past, we have, as a community, made comments on the idea of other forms of revenue other than the present approach, which is identifying small amounts of revenue based on registrant fees and having those aggregated and passed to ICANN via registry and registrar fees. Although in the past I had spoken in support of that, I increasingly am concerned that that would actually encourage ICANN to perhaps put itself in a difficult situation in relation to adhering to its responsibilities in acting in the public interest. So will your committee look at that existing approach, which is still codified in the strategic plan, and examine whether it is still appropriate or how it would fit in relation to the AOC? I understand that might be a strategic planning question, and I'm happy to have it deferred.
Thank you, Ram. It's obviously a very fundamental one in relation to the financing of ICANN. Ram, has the committee spent any time? Do you want to respond? Thank you.
Thanks, Madeline. I think it's something that's been in the minds of the Finance Committee and staff to seeing what else we ought to do in terms of bolstering the revenue streams. And so one step we took last year was to, first of all, identify costs that are being spent today to support some of the organizations. So they, you know, it's highlighted what's the money being spent to the at-large, to the CC community. And all of that was first is to let the community know where the expense heads are. And now we're looking at saying what are possible revenue streams that we could then look at. So that's part of the strategic workshop that we're looking towards.
I just have a follow-up, Ram. Raj, thank you. However, I'm actually questioning whether, in light of the reaffirmation of acting in the public interest, whether we do not need to reassess the idea that we may be putting the organization in a difficult situation by looking for other revenue streams. So that's really my question, and whether that's been, but whether that's been thought about.
I haven't thought about it that way. Thanks for pointing that out.
Marilyn, I might be able to help a little bit with, there was some thought a year or so ago that ICANN could have a role in receiving revenue from the sale of certain TLDs or of opening up single letter, for example, TLDs at some of the existing TLDs. We've moved away quite rapidly completely from that. I don't want to see ICANN in the role of a registrar or a registrant. And receiving money from the sale of TLDs is a very slippery slope, given what's coming up with the issuing of lots of new TLDs and other things. So that there was, at various stages, discussions around that area, and I can pretty well tell you that there aren't any more.
Thank you.
Thank you for that. Steve Crocker.
Let me add a comment, Marilyn. That is a first-class question, and I think we all appreciate it quite a bit. I'm a member of the Finance Committee, so I've been in some of these discussions as well. We've actually looked at this in several different respects, none of which have yet gelled into something specific, but it has gotten quite a bit of attention. One aspect is to what extent is our current budget at risk if there are sharp changes in the environment, and hence would we be under pressure to do things that we might not otherwise to do. So that's kind of in the here and now. Under existing structure, are we well enough protected? And that gets a significant amount of attention, and the reserve fund and other kinds of discussions are certainly part of that. And then the larger question, is this the right model for long-term financing of ICANN is a bigger question. And as you, as Ramaraj explained, the a first step is to get some clarification about where the expenses are arising, and then over time that allows a sensible discussion about matching up possibly the expenses with the revenues. No concrete specific answers, but absolutely that question in multiple guises is permeating the discussions.
Thanks, Steve. Ram, anything further? If not, I think there's a second question. Bertrand, good morning.
Hi, good morning. Sorry, my name is Bertrand Lachapelle. I'm the French GAC representative. As usual, Marilyn has asked a very, very important question. I fully support this question, and thanks for the answer. It's an ongoing discussion. I just wanted to make one comment on a word that Peter just used, which is considering revenues from the sale of TLDs. There cannot be such a thing. TLDs can be at best delegated, never sold, in any case. So the question cannot even arise.
Further questions or comments? Jean-Jacques.
Merci, Peter.
Thank you, Peter. I will speak in French, of course. I have a question and a comment, rather. I have a comment regarding the reserve fund for that ICANN reserves fund, which comes from its income. I asked that question a few months ago to find out that's how exactly this amount was invested, this reserve was invested, and I had a very clear answer and a very detailed answer from the main party to the finance, from the on the staff side, that's Kevin Wilson, and I would like to thank him here. In fact, the proportion of available income for ICANN, which is invested in financial products, in U.S. Financial products, was less than a third of the total amount. I don't remember the amount, but I think around 18%. So I know that this aligns with the internal rules that ICANN has. So there is no problem from that perspective. My comment is more about the good management of our finance, because when I look at the economical and financial situation in the world, I can see that that financial revenue from Europe and from Asia, especially within the context of the global financial crisis, have behaved rather better than those, for example, from North America. So it's more a question of good management and opportunity. I'm wondering whether we shouldn't be more flexible within our management in order to confirm, to secure our investments. So my question is to the chair of the Finance Committee, my friend Ram. And so it's not about internal principles and rules. It's a question of management and opportunity. Thank you.
And then I have Raimundo.
Okay. Thank you, Jean-Jacques, for that input. We did have a review of two policies. One was the investment policy, and two was also the foreign exchange policy. And both of these were done at Sydney. Our attempt, and I think your advice about looking international, currently our advice from the investment policy is that we should have 30% international and 70% American and local here. So I think from there, to have it more international is good advice. We will take this input back to our investment policy advisors and get their input and come back with what they say to the management. That's the way we function, so that we have no knee-jerk reaction, but have a balanced view in these areas. But thank you for that very valuable input.
And next we move to Raimundo. Raimundo?
Thanks, Peter. I would like to comment on the observation made by Bertrand de la Chapelle, and I think it's very important. It's very important that we should underline it, because that is true for all the critical resources. We are going now to the IGF, where we are going to discuss about the critical resources and all the TLDs and all the addresses are critical resources, and they are never sold.
Thanks very much. Any other comments or questions for the chair of the Dennis Jennings? Dennis?
Just to remind people that we're not in the business of speculating on currencies or international markets, no matter what our personal views are on the way the dollar may or may not go. And so the overriding principle is that we match our investments and our incomes to our expenditures. And that's what we try and do as best we can. So even if everybody in the room here thinks, for example, that the dollar is going to collapse. And please don't take that as any indication that I think that the dollar is going to collapse or any suggestion that it might. But hypothetically, that doesn't mean that we should then immediately react on that. We have to be very cautious with our resources. Thank you.
Thank you, Dennis. And another one from Jean-Jacques.
Yes, I'd like to take this opportunity to respond directly to Dennis. Thank you for that very interesting remark, Dennis. It's not so much, I think, a question of what any individual on the board has as a personal view or as a conviction about the ups and downs of any particular currency. I think there is a trend. For instance, Dennis, who in March 2007... noticed that the component M3 stopped being published by the Treasury in the United States, or rather by the Federal Reserve? Was that an indication that there was going to be a dollar problem? So what I'm suggesting is not that we input private views, but it is our duty as board members, I think, to have a broader view of the world situation. And in that respect, I would advise, and thank you, Ramaraj, for your early explanation, I would advise that we go perhaps beyond what you're looking at, which is 30%, 70%. I think that proportion should be left flexible, not up to the board, but to the best advice that you as Finance Committee receive. And I would advise that also I'm using the same word three times, that's awkward, but I can't find anything else for the time being, that the advice given to the Finance Committee come not only from the usual consultants, which, if I understood correctly, are mainly from North America and particularly from the United States, but that you start garnering advice from wider afield, because that's really the point, is that, let's say 5 years ago, the US dollar represented above 70%, in fact above 80% of all foreign currency reserves worldwide. Today, that proportion is about 55%, whereas the euro, for instance, which is only a few years old, by the way, is already more than 25% of all international currency reserves, and not only in the European Union, but worldwide. So I'm making my point that it's in the best interests of ICANN and the community that we have a closer look at this. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Jean-Jacques. No further questions? Let's move to the next committee report. Thank you, Ramaraj. Let's go to the IANA committee, and I call on Harold Alvestrand, the chair of that committee, to give the report.
Thank you, Chair. Let me see, can we have the slide of the IANA committee? Sorry?
We appear not to have any graphics for the IANA slide.
Okay, so I will speak to my own copy.
Harold, would you like me to just adjourn that while you find the slide?
Oh, I have the slide here. I just expected it to be up on screen.
Well, why don't we just give you a minute and you can get that slide to Nancy and she can put it up. And why don't we move, while that's happening, to the Risk Committee. Bruce, sorry to jump to you before you... But knowing how well prepared you always are, I'm sure you can move to the report of the Risk Committee. And Harold, if that would allow you a moment to get your slide up. Bruce.
Thank you, Peter. On the ICANN website under the, section that relates to the reports, there is actually an online report from the Risk Committee. That relates to our meeting that was held in September. And in that meeting, we had the staff present to us their own risk analysis. At an organisational level, and the risks out of that risk analysis, they identified risks into five primary categories. And there was a total of 26 risks assessed for the organisation back in September. The categories that were used to assess the risk were sort of credit or financial generally, legal, changes in the market, strategic risks and reputation risks. And clearly reputation risks usually result from a failure in not meeting our strategic objectives, for example. That each of those risks was assessed on the basis of the likelihood that the risk would happen, as well as the consequence of that risk happening. And it's the combination of those two things allows prioritisation of those risks. So we now have a framework, and as a result of that framework, the staff are starting to plan the work or topics for mitigation of risks in the operating plan beginning 1st of July next year. So they've taken the 26 risks that were identified in September, combined some of those, so the number of risks that was presented in the risk meeting last weekend was down to about 19, and I think we're further refining those so that we have a more condensed set of major risks. So far out of those, 6 risks have been identified for budget to carry out risk mitigation next year. And just to give, I'm not going to try and go through all of those, but just to give a bit of some examples that are common as an organisation grows. One of ICANN's roles here is making sure it manages contractual compliance, both for registries and registrars. And a key element of that is treating all parties fairly and using the same processes for compliance. But as ICANN gets bigger, there's now more people involved. We're also dealing with people in different regions and different cultures. And so we need to make sure that we have a consistent, I guess, quality control and definition of process that allows multiple people to apply those compliance rules, whereas when you've got one person that's doing the work, that's an easier task. Another category is business continuity. Obviously, as the internet becomes more important, we're more conscious of if we have a major power outage, for example, in our office in Los Angeles, that we can carry out all the important ICANN functions from a different location. And as a result of some of the work that's coming out of the route scaling study, one of the important functions that ICANN performs is managing LRoute. And so one of the things there is making sure that we strengthen the infrastructure around the route server that we are responsible for. And finally, one of the other risks is, I guess, our match of staff resourcing to the commitments we make. One of the things that ensures ICANN has a good reputation is that it carries out all the objectives it states at the beginning of the year in its operating plan, and it's important that we have the right match of staff resourcing to those commitments and able to adjust that resourcing as we need to as new tasks arise. So it's just examples of some of the risks that have been identified, and we're looking at methods of mitigating those risks. Another thing we're starting to do is take the enterprise risk management process and start applying it to specific projects. So the risk committee has asked for its next meeting that we have a more detailed report from staff on the risks associated with adding new GTLDs. And we'd also expect similar risk analysis on other major projects like DNSSEC as another example. I think at that point I will finish my report. Thanks, Peter.
Just attending to the private matter here with the new CEO. Thank you. Questions of the Chairman of the Risk Committee, and I see Steve Goldstein. Steve?
Thank you, Chair. I have served on the Risk Committee, and as I'm sure most of you know, I'm about to be leaving the board. So I had urged certain things to my committee members, and because I will no longer be here to hope to see that they're carried out, I just want to leave these thoughts. So far, I think we've done a pretty pedestrian job of applying a standard industrial model to corporate risks, turning the crank and getting answers. But those things don't even begin to think of what would happen if a certain Archduke Ferdinand had been assassinated. In other words, very unlikely kinds of events that you don't get when you just apply a standard model and turn the crank. And one way I found of dealing with things like that is to seriously sit down and seriously try to identify and question assumptions that we make in every single day of our lives and ask if those assumptions are valid looking into the future. So one example that I was confronted with in planning many years ago was that energy would always be abundantly available and cheap. You know, and then there was the Suez oil crisis, and that was no longer the case, and all our thinking was changed. But nobody ever thought about that because energy and oil always were very abundant and very cheap for us. Right now, water is becoming a very scarce resource. So I'm not suggesting that these things have much to do with the DNS, but what are the things that we're assuming that we don't even realize we're assuming, and how might those things change? And how might these unforeseen, unlikely events, can we identify some of these things and see if we've got any possible relevance to those and any responses up our sleeves to deal with those things? So thank you, sir.
Thank you, Steve. Risk assessment and analysis, very complex. Any other questions of the Risk Committee? If not, I'll come back to Harold and just check. Harold, how's our technology? If we're ready to proceed, please give us the report of the IANA committee.
We seem to be ready. So, slide 2. Committee members. It's a fairly large committee, as committees go. That's because we have suborned some of the extraordinary technological talent on the board by means of including two of our liaisons, who have very deep understanding of this area. Next slide. We met in Sydney, and we met on telephone once between meetings. We intended to have a second meeting, but that was cancelled due to other circumstances. Next slide. We got through a bit of work. The most important thing that IANA is currently changing is the DNSSEC stuff. So, of course, we are focused on that. But also, IANA manages multiple other functions, like handing out addresses, like managing the top level of the reverse mapping tree. And it's doing a lot for the IETF as a protocol parameter registry, which includes... And its work includes conversion of registries from just text files to something that's a little more structured. IANA is also trying to automate itself to make service for its DNS customers that is taking the ease of use and the ability to scale to a new level of service. The board IANA committee is not trying to control all that. We're trying to oversee it to make sure that we know what's happening and know that we have a good feeling for that the right things are being taken care of. So that's the last slide. Any comments? Let's go on.
Hang on. You didn't get off quite so easily, Harold. There's a question from your colleague, Ram Mohan, to your left. Ram.
Thank you. Harold, just a quick question. What is the IANA plan for the IDN repository that is really not directly part of the IANA function but is tagged along with it? Is that something that the committee has looked at?
The IDN repository... Or the IDN tables repository is a function that is being run as if it was part of the protocol parameters registry. It's a file area that
that where we receive requests from various sources to register tables. The service seems to be running. There have been very few comments about it. I do not know its current scale. When you talk about IDN, there's an item that was reported in our meeting on Sunday, which is not part of this report, is that IANA is scaling up staffing so that it has enough people available to deal with the result of the IDN CCTLD process. We're expecting it to take a while until those requests actually arrive at IANA, given that all processes take time, but we believe that IANA is ready for it.
So, Thomas, another question.
I just want to follow up briefly, Ram, to your question about whether IDN tables are properly a part of IANA. And this is a bit of a fine, subtle point, because most of the protocol parameter registry things that IANA does is through the IETF and through IETF actions, where there's a document published that makes it clear what the action is. But in the case of the IDN tables, that was, because it was not originated from the IETF side, it actually did go through the board, and IANA is authorized to do that as part of one of its tasks.
Any reaction or further comment, Harold?
I think Thomas had represented it adequately.
Thank you. Any other comments of the chair of the IANA committee? If not, we'll move to the next one, which is structural improvements, which I explained deals with the bylaw reviews. And the chair of that is Roberto. Roberto.
Thank you. So, the structural improvement committee has been formed 1 year ago and inherited some of the tasks that were originally assigned at the BGC. So, next slide, please. Not one more. That was the mandate of the committee. The membership is shown in this slide. Myself as a chair, Raimundo, Rita, Mike, and Jean-Jacques are valuable member of this committee. Next slide. So what the SIC does is has a mandate from the board to coordinate the process by which reviews of the different parts of this organization are done. It does so by creating working groups. And then another important task is the coordination between what happens in the different working groups, in order to have a set of homogeneous changes and proposals. Next slide. So this is the situation where the different reviews are. What was done since Sydney for the GNSO, we are now assisting the implementation, and as you all know, Wednesday the GNSO with the new format has been seated. That was I would say the conclusion of the an important milestone, but not completely, because some of the stakeholder groups still have interim charter, so there is still some more work that has to be done by the SIC that will be done by my successor. The ALAC review is also going into implementation. We had a meeting here in Sydney where the first plan for the implementation was discussed. Then we have three reviews that are now at the end of the working group work. So the board review, the NOMCOM review, and the SSAC review. And we are at the stage of the presentation of the final report that are out for public comment. Then the RSSAC working group is initiating its working group work. And we also started the CCNSO. We are at the stage of appointing the contractor that has to, the external contractor that has to do the fact collection and the, produce the initial proposal. And I would, when we get to the next slide, I will make a specific comment on this on this process. The last review that is that has to be done of the group of the mandated reviews is the ASO, and for this we are considering a slate of candidates to participate in the working group. The working group has not been created yet, and it's part of the task that will be inherited by my successor. Next slide. One important activity that was done after Sydney was the finalization of a review process. In the beginning, as you might remember, we had all reviews that were done a bit inventing on the moment what was the best way to go and to conduct them, having accumulated experience on the review process. We have in time discussed the optimal way to deal with these reviews, and now we have presented a draft for public comment, and then that has been approved by the board. And now, so we have a documented way to conduct the reviews. One of the important steps, and that is what is the reference to the CCNSO, one of the important steps is that we have a more formal way to select the contractor with a small team that that will get the input from the bids and make a proposal, a recommendation for the selection. And this is what has been done, for instance, for the CCNSO in the last month. So, next slide, please. And another and last activity in which the SIC has been engaging is to cross-reference all the recommendation and the proposed modification on all different working groups, so that that at the end we have a consistent set of recommendation for structural improvement across the different parts of the organization. And that concludes the presentation.
Thank you, Roberto. And my compliments to the slides. Very clear and very informative. Are there questions of the Chairman of the Structural Improvements Committee? Bertrand?
Bertrand de la Chapelle. Thanks, Roberto, for the presentation. And I just would like to make one reminder regarding the articulation that you mentioned in the end between the different reviews that are ongoing. The ASO review and the CCNSO review are to come in the future, but the ones that are really interrelated are the GNSO reform, the ALAC, the NOMCOM, and the board. The document that you mentioned in the end regarding the interarticulation, is this going to be presented and discussed within the community, or is it just for internal consumption of the board? And in this perspective, each of those reviews will require some element of modification of the bylaws. Some of the modifications are important, some are not. As you know, any kind of bylaws or constitutional structure, framework, each of the pieces are a supple balance between one and the other. So when you tweak one, it usually has a repercussion on the other. Do you plan, as the committee, to present at one moment in time an integrated bylaws revision document highlighting the current bylaws and the track changes before the board discusses it, and so that the community can also discuss it and see the balance?
Yes. It's hard to answer in a simple way to this question. I would like first to start from the fact that these interactions have been analyzed. We have started to analyze these interactions quite a while ago. Specifically in Sydney, we had a session that was related to the interactions. So we had also some public comments, comments from the public, I would say, at that session, that were extremely useful. The problem is that we cannot wait until all the reviews, GNSO, board, ALAC, and NOMCOM specifically, reviews are at the end in order to produce the set of bylaws that is consistent. And so we try to do it as a work in progress. So produce changes the moment that they are necessary. For instance, the changes to the bylaws for the GNSO have been already recommended to the board and already adopted. And we keep that in mind in terms of regression on the ongoing reviews. This was done because otherwise we would have waited too long for applying like a sort of a Big Bang structural improvement. So the answer is it is a process that is ongoing and goes incrementally towards the end goal. At the end, the SIC plans to have a synoptic view of all the changes related to all the different parts of the organization. That will be done, as you are probably aware, by my successor as I'm ending my term as a chair of the SIC. But that was the plan. So at one point in time, you will have a global view of what are the changes. That will be when the changes are mostly already done, but just in terms of having a whereas you have the possibility of commenting when each individual part of the organization is changed, but based on a blueprint of the global plan.
May I?
Karen?
Thank you, Roberto. It is not, I agree, an all or nothing or a Big Bang type of thing. What I see in your answer is that you're actually having a certain number of modifications that are agreed, that are ready to be implemented, and the GNSO Council reform is a typical example of that. And so it is not a way for me to say you should wait until everything is ready and put in a single document. There are things, and the board is probably taking decisions to move forward on a certain number of things. However, there are other processes that are going on that are connected to this. I'll give you a concrete example. The GNSOPDP reform process is not part of this type of review, but it is ongoing. There is in parallel the joint GAC working group that will be dealing with the role of the GAC not only in relation to the board, but also in relation with the policy development process of the GNSO. What is at stake here is the institutional balance of the organization, and it is a critical component of its accountability framework. Therefore, there are some modifications that have to be made right now because they've been agreed, and this is fine. But I would strongly encourage not only the SIC but also the board, but because it is not dealing only with the issues the SIC covers, to plan for the coming months, and particularly until Nairobi and potentially Brussels, the thinking about the institutional evolution of the organization on the basis of those reforms, but to present the different elements in an integrated manner. The joint GAC working group, the PDP review, and some of the other elements that are already identified need at one moment in time to be put in a track-changed document so that we can evaluate the balance. And in this respect, I would respectfully suggest that this is about the institutional balance of the organization, and therefore the community as a whole needs to have a tool to not only input, but to discuss. The purpose of such a track change, proposed revised bylaws, is that there should be a possibility at one moment in time for the community to discuss among itself and not only to input. This is a format that is deeply missing, and the coming months are going to be important in that respect.
Thanks. Thanks for that. We're now considerably out of time. Thank you for that suggestion. I'm sure that's taken on. I'm sorry, Raimondo, you'll have to do it online through the committee because we need to move on.
Peter, just one word to acknowledge the work, the assistance that we have had by staff all this all along this process that was very difficult and required a substantial input by staff, and Marco Lorenzoni was the staff member who assisted us and who also prepared all the slides.
Excellent. Thanks very much. That's the end of the board committee reports. We then move to an next set of reports which come from our staff.